Come on, come all, come gather round. Come hear tales both lost and found. Grab yourself a drink with a splash of lime. It's David and Michael's story time.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another exciting episode of Story Time. I'm the one speaking, which means I'm doing a story today. My name's Michael Santel.
And I'm the one speaking, which means I'm the one listening today. That's David Miller.
I'm so happy we've established a routine that we are able to execute every single time.
Without fail. Never falls apart.
So often, when it comes my time again,
It feels like it's been a while since your time.
It has been my time, because I feel usually when it's my time.
I did like an Animorphs, and then we had a guest, and then Animorphs again. Yeah.
Listen, I don't want people to know that the dirty secret of guests are we don't have to do any work, which is why I always want to have guests.
It's really funny that whenever the guests come in, it's when it normally would be your week. Did you ever notice that?
It just works out that way.
Sure does.
But I'm very pleased with myself, with the stories I have brought to you today. Mm-hmm. David, we're hitting up everybody. We're hitting up Grimm's and Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh boy, this is a real grab bag, yeah.
A real grab bag. The first story, these stories, the fairy tales are so... They're almost like Lego pieces, that they're interchangeable. It'll be like, beginning and this middle piece, and we put them together.
That's why literally our bit of predictions for these is literally just a checklist of five things. A yes or no on this puzzle piece this time?
I think that the story I'm going to start with you today is a grab bag of all the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
So do not beat yourself up for the puzzle pieces that you don't get.
Also, it's always a guessing game.
Always.
The title is sometimes a clue to one of the five things. Yeah.
And as I'm telling you this, I know that I have told you all of these pieces before, but never in this sort of configuration.
It's so funny, because to peel back the curtain a little bit more, like... That comes through when you send me 2 days ago a text message that is just a picture of the title where you ask me, did I tell you this? And I go, I don't think so.
David, I checked the wonderful form that we have, and I still... Shout out to Lotan. Yeah, shout out to you, Lotan. You're doing the Lord's work. And I double checked it, I felt like I had told you this story. I feel like if that's true, I think that's just going to be the case moving forward. We're more than halfway done with this book.
Exactly.
I feel
we've seen all the templates now, and now it's just we're running them out until the clock stops.
Well, the clock is about to stop because we're about to go. David, I am telling you on page 92 of your reader book, page 332.
So chapter 92, page...
Thank you. I wrote it on the board, okay? Just write it down.
When you say page, it's fine.
I am telling you the King of the Golden Mountain.
That is an amazing title.
It's a great title.
The King of the Golden, Golden Mountain.
Yeah, and I would maybe write small. I feel like you're going to have a lot of notes for this one.
Okay. I have a whole two-sided whiteboard.
I think that... You know, one of the issues with these older stories is that there's a translation error and we don't understand the past. So I usually wouldn't do this, but I'll just give a general trigger warning for this one.
Oh, boy.
I'm
less excited about this story.
I think that what they mean when they say these terms have more to do with the underworld. Oh. That being said, I will allow you to interpret the words because I will read them in their entirety.
You will read them and I will interpret if I have to bleep them. Yeah.
I don't think you'll have to bleep anything.
Oh, just a huge preface before this starts.
We'll see. Listen, if you bleep what you want to bleep, okay?
Okay, you know what? I always do.
David, King of the Golden Mountain, is this a rich man or a poor man?
This is a rich man.
Unless he's
a poor man who becomes the king of the... But then he becomes rich. If he's the king of the Golden Mountain, he becomes rich.
David, this tree branch right here of rich man, poor man, is it his son or his daughter? Is it full circle? I don't know. You inceptioned this on your own. So is it a rich man or a poor man?
I'm going to say rich man. It's the king of the Golden Mountain. That is
okay.
That is
a rich okay.
Man. Okay.
Great. Is God involved?
Yes.
Is there talking animals?
I was going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes.
How many dead bodies?
Four. I was going to say 14. Between 4 and 14.
Okay, between 4 and 14. That's pretty good. I mean, I know I can't confirm or deny that.
If in one sentence they go, and then they killed 3,000 men, it's like, well, fuck, right? Like,
yeah.
If a whole town is destroyed, then damn it. Like, you know.
Ooh, yes, kind of. And then there's always a fifth one. I always forget what the fifth one was.
Is there a forced marriage?
Is there a forced marriage?
Or marriage as a reward, quote unquote. Yes. I'm going to say yes. I'm the yeses across the board on this.
Funny enough, I feel like forced marriage is different than marriage as a reward.
Well, like a marriage where the princess is the prize for doing something. I count that as a forced marriage.
Okay.
Because it's then forced for her.
This story then does, I'll let you know, it does have a forced marriage, but she's
like into it.
Forces the marriage. Yeah, she's into it.
She makes the deal.
Well, okay. Again, I'll have you. This is why I bring these stories to you. Okay.
So we're going to be progressive in women's rights, but we're not going to be progressive on racial politics.
David, I think you just hit the nail on the head.
Why does one have to come at the expense of the other? I tell you.
Yeah, it's like that clip online where the guy's like, what would you rather have? Economic freedom or equal rights for people?
Yeah, yeah. I choose both. Yeah.
You can't. Well, I do.
I love that clip because that guy's like, no, you have to pick one. He's like, I refuse the, like, this. I refuse this question. Like, I choose both. It's so good.
It's so good because I know what the guy answering the question is, but the other guy's right. Like, nah, fuck you. You don't have any power over me. Like, what are you? I'm not going to say any of that shit.
I don't need to say what you tell me to say. Yeah. Anyway.
King of the Golden Mountain, a.k.a. a fairy tale with everything and the kitchen sink.
Fairy tale. Oh, I'm glad it is with everything because I said yes to everything.
You did a good job, David. There was once a certain merchant who had two children, a boy and a girl.
Okay.
They were both young and could not walk.
Oh, so yeah, very young.
And two richly laden ships of his sailed to the sea with all of his property on board. And just as he was expecting to win much money by them, news came that they had gone to the bottom. Instead of being a rich man, he was a poor one.
I'm so glad that I chose this. Like, I chose rich man and not the poor man becomes rich man path. I chose the right direction.
And had nothing left but one field outside in town. But I guess, like, now we're, like, squabbling, like, does a person with land, like, but whatever. You were correct. He was a rich man, but now he's a poor man.
He's not, yes.
In order to drive his misfortune a little out of his thoughts, he went out to his field. And as soon as he was walking forwards and backwards, a little black mannequin stood suddenly by his side and asked why he was so sad and why he was talking so much to heart. Then said the merchant, if you could help me, I would willingly tell you. Who knows? Replied the black dwarf. Perhaps I can help you. Then the merchant told him that all of his possessions had gone to the bottom of the sea and that he had nothing left but the field. Do not trouble yourself, said the dwarf. If you will promise me to give me the first thing that rubs itself against your leg when you are at home again, and bring it here to this place in 12 years' time, then you shall have as much money as you will.
So now I'm already seeing where you're like, I've told him this story before, because we have had basically this setup. The main difference is this one is really concerned with the fact that he's black.
It's a black mannequin this time around.
I don't know why they feel the need to really drive that home.
David, there's a couple times, I don't know why, it's driving it home for some reason.
Okay.
The merchant, now, but again, I don't know if it means black as in melatonin, or if it means black as in a dark sorcerer, if you will.
Oh, I think it more means literal color.
Like, okay. Yeah. Okay, if this is 1860s Germany.
Because I'm picturing a more fantastical world, I'm not thinking like a black dwarf in the sense that we say, like, a black person.
Sure.
I'm thinking, like, an actual, like, it is, like, the dark shade of black. You know what I mean?
I also think that this world is magical enough in this tale to have that interpretation of the words. Yeah.
But either way, I don't think we need to focus on it as much.
We don't
as
need
the
to focus on
is.
The black mannequin? Okay,
Well, we could focus on him as a character. It's just that part of him is probably not the important element of what he's about.
Heard David. The merchant thought, what can that be but my dog? And did not remember his little boy. So he said yes, gave the black man a written and sealed promise, and went home. When he reached home, his little boy was so delighted that he held a bench, trotted up to him, and seized him fast by the leg.
It's so funny to me that the guy's like, well, I immediately remember my dog, but I don't, what's a child? Like,
also, he has two child. That daughter he is only, never fucking mentioned again.
Yeah, yeah.
Never really? Once. For Amazing. Real talk, never mentioned again.
Amazing.
The father was shocked. I mean, if this was an improv scene, I would give notes of like, hey, what happened to the daughter you promised?
Hey, person who was the daughter, why did you just leave the scene and never come back?
Why did you never come back on stage? You really could have added to this family dynamic.
Also, I love that this happens so quickly, like this turnaround of like, make the deal about the rubbing the leg thing, and then immediately after the son comes up and does that. But like, even the story couldn't wait that long to, like, leave you in suspense. It was like, he didn't remember his son. Then he went home and his son. It was like, you didn't have to tell us. Like,
this story is moving along at a real quick pace. The father was shocked, for he remembered his promise and now knew what he had pledged himself to do. As, however, he still found no money in his chest, he thought the dwarf had only been jesting. A month afterwards, he went up to the attic, intending to gather some old tin to sell, and saw a great heap of money lying.
No!
Then he was happy again, made purchases, became a great merchant than before, and felt that his world was well governed. In the meantime, the boy grew tall, and at the same time sharp and clever. But the nearer the 12th year approached, the more anxious the merchant grew. So that his distress might be seen on his face. One day, his son asked him what ailed him, but the father would not say. The boy, however, persisted so long that at last he told him without being aware of what he was doing. He had promised him to a black dwarf and had received much money for doing so. He was not...
which, when you say it like that, is literally, I sold you.
Yes. He said likewise that he had set his hand to seal to this, and now, when 12 years had gone by, he would have to give him up. Then said the son, "Oh, father, do not be uneasy. All will go well. The black man has no power over me."
Oh, my God.
The son had himself... What, David? He has Nothing. No power over him.
It's just... It's just the way that it's worded. It's
the
not,
way that it is
it's
worded.
Not necessary.
It's like what's his name from Arrested Development? The guy who blew himself. It's like, there's got to be a better way to say that. The son had himself blessed by a priest. And when the time came, the father and son went together to the field. The son made a circle and placed himself inside of it with his father. Then came the black dwarf and said to the old man, "Have you brought with you which you have promised me?" He was silent, but the son asked, "What do you want here?" Then said the black dwarf, "I have to speak with your father and not with you." The son replied, "You have betrayed and misled my father. Give back the writing." "No," said the black dwarf, I will not give up my rights." They spoke together for a long time after this, but at last they agreed that the son, as he did not belong to the enemy of mankind, nor did he belong to his father, should seat himself in a small boat, which should lie on the water which was flowing away from them, and that the father should push it off with his own foot, and then the son should remain giving up to the water.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Okay. Well... They dropped in a sentence in the middle there.
Yeah, Yeah, the black dwarf was the enemy of mankind.
A descriptor of the two sides in this disagreement. The father, whose son was blessed by a priest.
Yes!
And the black the enemy dwarf, of who mankind. Is the, quote, enemy of mankind.
What, yeah, it's weird. I don't know which way...
What are the subtextual things that the Grimm's brothers are trying to tell us here?
Listen.
I'm not excited about this.
You, listen. These comeuppance will come up many times in Germany's history moving forward. At this time, though, it's very low stakes.
I don't know. Okay, but then that's not even to say anything of the decision that was made, which was... neither of us get the son, and we're gonna put him in a boat and just push him off into the water.
The water will decide his fate, David. You know, like the Bible.
It's very like a mix between Solomon, well, I'll cut the baby in half and both of you can get half, and Moses, where, oh, I'll put the baby in the boat in the river and just push it off into the river.
Yeah, and there's also a weird... subtextual magic. Like, the kid makes a circle and, like, yeah, obviously...
got the blessing by the priest and then makes a circle and then they have to hash it out with a...
Yeah, and funny enough, I didn't read that the blessing of the priest was like, they like, hey, let's go see a priest before, but, like, the son had been christened in the church. So, yeah. Like...
He's, like, wasn't... protected against the evil that is this dwarf, you know?
Yes, yes. Oh, what David, I need more descriptors. Is it like a dwarf?
It's like a shorter person. It's like a...
Like a mannequin. Oh, like a mannequin.
Yeah, okay, like a mannequin, you. Yeah.
Any other descriptors that I should be aware of?
Not that seem relevant to me.
Oh, okay. Just wondering. So he took leave of his father, placed himself in a little boat, and the father had to push it off with his own foot. The boat capsized so that the Neil was uppermost, and the father believed his son was lost and went home and mourned for him.
So he gets in the boat, his dad kicks it off with his foot, and immediately the boat flips over.
Does a thing, and he's like, well, he's dead, and just goes home and cries.
How hard did he kick the boat?
Well, David, the boat, however, did not sink, but floated quietly away, and the boy sat safely inside of it.
Which he would have been able to see.
And it floated for thus a long time, until at last it stopped by an unknown shore. Now, Dad's really sad. His son's dead. He, like, kicked it and was like, he's dead to me, and then, like,
it, like,
walked away.
Flipped over, and then he's like, well, there it goes forever. But it's, like, just, it floated away just upside down.
Yeah.
And I imagine he's under, like breathing the air that's in the bubble that's in the boat, right?
And he says he sits there. So, like, he's just, like, sitting in an upside down boat.
So maybe he, like, swam out under and got on top of the upside down boat and is, like, sitting on the bottom of the boat.
I wish we had more context, David, because now we're on the unknown shore. Then he landed and saw a beautiful castle before him and set out to go onto it. But when he entered it, he found that it was bewitched. He went through every room.
How does he know? Is there a sign?
This castle is proudly bewitched by the black dwarf.
It's like it's like an ADT home security sign. Like, yeah, it's home, like, protected by bewitched.
Yeah. There's a little wink and a little sparkle there. He went through every room, but all were empty until he reached the last, where a snake lay coiled on a ring. The snake, however, was an enchanted maiden who rejoiced to see him and said, "Have you come, O my deliverer? I have already waited 12 years for this. This kingdom is bewitched, and you must set it free."
Okay, so I've already waited 12 years, so she's older than this kid, because this kid is 12 and change.
We don't technically know the age of the kid, other than
how long
he was
floated,
barely learning to walk.
Right,
but yes,
so
that is true.
He's like 12, between 12 and 14, but like probably between 12 and 13.
He got himself an old lady, David. What can I say? People die young back then. "How can I do that?" he inquired. This is what the maiden tells him. "Tonight, come 12 black men, covered with chains, who will ask what you are doing here. Keep silent and give them no answer, and let them do what they will with you. They will torment you, beat you, stab you. Let everything pass, and only do not speak. At 12 o'clock, they will go away. On the second night, 12 others will come. On the third, 24, who will cut off your head. But at 12 o'clock, their power will be over. And then, if you have endured all and have not spoken the slightest word, I shall be released. I will come to you and will have a bottle with some water of life. I will rub it on you, and then you will come to life again and be as healthy as before.
They will cut off your head. If you endure that, you... Also, this exact premise has also happened in another story you told me. It was the...
With 12 the boy black men?
I think they did describe... It was the lady was, like, black, and then every night he, like, dealt with getting hit by these, like, demons or whatever. She got lighter and lighter until she was freed.
Yes, that's true.
Again.
Yeah. Right?
That was, like, the boy who didn't know fear or whatever it was called. Yeah.
Well, this is the this is the King of the Golden Mountain, so let's see what happens.
It's a technically different story that is the same story, just more overtly racist.
Of the 12 black men, the 24 black men, the 36 black men that come in their gangs. I've heard that's what the news... When I listen
to
Fox
News, says.
I've heard about these gangs before.
God damn it.
Then said he, I will gladly set you free. And everything happened just as she said it had. The black men could not force a single word from him. And on the third night, the snake became a beautiful princess who came with the water of life and brought him back to life again. So she threw herself into his arms and kissed him. And there was so much joy and gladness in the whole castle. After this, their marriage was celebrated. And he was the King of the Golden Mountain. They lived happily together, and the king bore a fine boy. 8 years had already gone by when the king thought of his father. His heart had moved, and he wished to visit him. The queen, however, would not let him go away and said, I know beforehand it will cause my unhappiness. But he suffered her to have no rest until she consented. At their parting, she gave him a wishing ring and said, take this ring and put it on your finger, and then you will immediately be transported wherever you would be. Only, you must promise me not to use the wishing to wish me away from this place with your father.
Well,
then he promised her.
Okay.
You can do whatever you want to do, but if you make me leave this place, I'm going to be really unhappy.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what wives say. My wife doesn't go anywhere with me. She loves our house.
This is her talking to her son, right?
To her husband.
Oh.
She bought her husband, who's now 20 years old, wants to go see his dad because it's been 8 years since he was 12.
Sure.
And she was like, great, you can go, but do not wish me to go there with
you,
okay?
Gotcha, okay.
That he promised her and put the ring on his finger and wished himself at home, just outside the town where his father lived. Instantly, he found himself there and made for the town. But when he came to the gate, the sentries would not let him in because he wore such strange and yet such rich and magnificent clothing. Then he went to the hill where a shepherd was watching his sheep, changed clothes with him, put on the old shepherd's coat, and then he entered the town without hindrance.
It was literally just like, no, I don't like your coat. You can't come in.
It's also like the reverse dress code of like, you're way too nice for this town. Get the fuck out of here. When he came to his father, he made himself known, but he did not at all believe that the shepherd was his son and said that he certainly had a son, but that he was dead long ago. However, as he saw he was poor, needy shepherd, he would give him something to eat. Then the shepherd said to his parents, I am verily your son. Do you not know the mark on my body by which you could recognize me? Yes, said the mother. Our son had a raspberry mark under his right arm. He slipped back his shirt and they saw the raspberry mark under his right arm and no longer doubted that he was their son. Then he told them that he was the king of Golden Mountain and the king's daughter was his wife and they had a fine son of 7 years old. Then said the father, that is certainly not true. It is a fine kind of king who goes about in a ragged shepherd's coat. At this, the son fell into a passion, and without thinking of his promise, turned his ring around and wished both his wife and his child with him. They were there in a second, but the queen wept and reproached him and said that he had broken his word and had brought misfortune upon her. He said, I have done it thoughtlessly and did not do it with evil intention, and tried to calm her, and she pretended to believe this, but she had mischief in her mind.
Uh-oh.
Then he led her out of the town into the field and showed her the stream where the little boat had been pushed off. And then he said, "I am tired. Sit down. I will sleep a while on your lap." And when he laid his head on her lap, he fell asleep. When he was asleep, she drew the ring from his finger. Then she drew away the foot which he was under, leaving only the slipper behind. And she took her child in her arms and wished herself back to her own kingdom.
You know, when you fall asleep on your girlfriend's foot, because that's where she was like, you'll be comfortable here.
It said that, and I was like, that's weird. It said lap, and then it was like, and so he was on her foot. And it's like, what?
Listen, you never know, David. Maybe he's like, girl, you gotta let me sleep on them feet again. And she's like, all right, one last time.
So it said she took the child back to her own kingdom. So this is not the kingdom and home that they had built together.
The kingdom and home they did build together.
Oh, okay.
When he awoke, there it lay quite deserted, and his wife and child were gone, and so was the ring from his finger. Only the slipper was still there as a token. "Home to your parents you cannot return," thought he. "They would say that you were a wizard. You must be off and walk until you arrive in your own kingdom."
You can't go back home. They'll think you're a wizard. They'll fucking kill you. You with a coat of many colors like that? There's no way you could be here.
So he went away and came at length to a hill by which three giants were standing, disputing with each other that they did not know how to divide their father's property. When they saw him passing by, they called to him and said that little men had quick wits, and that he was to divide their inheritance for them. Their inheritance, however, consisted of a sword, which had the property, if anyone took it in their hand and said, "All heads off but mine," every head would lie on the ground.
What?
Secondly, of a cloak, which made anyone who put it on invisible. Thirdly, a pair of boots, which could transport the wearer to any place he wished in a moment.
David, I believe these are the Deathly Hallows, for lack of a better term. This is the magical MacGuffin of a Harry Potter world, except this is in a fairy tale world.
He said, "Give me the three things that I may see if they are still in good condition." They gave him the cloak, and when he put it on, he was invisible and changed into a fly. Then he resumed his own form and said, "The cloak is a good one. Now give me the sword."
Hold on. He turned invisible and changed into a fly?
Yes, David. He turned invisible and then turned into a fly.
Was the fly also invisible? David, or were those two separate modes?
It's a great fucking question, because maybe it just turns you into a fly, which people don't see. Like, oh, it's a tiny fly, so they don't see it. He's invisible,
but actually he's just little?
David, there are so many questions we will never have.
Is that the only
answer.
Thing that the cloak does? Is it could turn you invisible or into a fly?
David, I would love to know the rules of this inheritance. I didn't read the instructions.
Like, I'd still take it, I guess, but it's not.
I guess. Yeah, but it's like, right, you did it. Okay. This is not what you promised me.
Even invisibility's good. Like, why have the fly part?
It's a great question, David.
"The cloak is a good one. Now give me the sword." They said, "No, we will not give that to you. If you were to say, 'All heads off but mine,' all of our heads would be off, and you alone would be left with yours." Nevertheless, they gave it to him with the condition that he was only to try it against a tree. This he did, and the sword cut it into the trunk of the tree as if it were a blade of straw. Then he wanted to have the boots likewise, but they said, "No, we will not give them to you. If you had them on your feet, you were to wish yourself on top of that hill, we would be left down here with nothing." "Oh no," said he, "I will not do that." So they gave him the boots as well.
Oh my God.
And now, when he had got all of these things, he thought of nothing but his wife and his child, and said as though to himself, "Oh, if I were with them on the Golden Mountain." And at the same moment, he vanished from the sight of the giants, and thus their inheritance was divided.
Oh my God.
When he... Oh, the story's not over, David. That
no, I know,
great,
but
yeah.
that is such a, like, it, like, the guy was like, and that's how I solved their problem. And really what you did was ruin their lives. Like, you know.
Yes. When he was near the palace, he heard sounds of joy and fiddles and flutes. Oh. And people told him that his wife was celebrating her wedding with another.
Yeah.
Then he fell into a rage and said, "False woman, she betrayed me and deserted me while I was asleep."
You straight up broke the one promise you gave to her.
So he put on the cloak and, unseen by all, went into the palace.
Oh no.
When he entered the dining hall, a great table was spread with delicious food. And the guests were eating and drinking and laughing and jesting. Jesting, not ingesting, even though that was part of the activities. She sat on the royal seat in the middle of them in splendid apparel with her crown on her head. He placed himself behind her and no one saw him. When she put a piece of meat on her plate for herself, he took it away and ate it. And when she poured out a glass of wine for herself, he took it away and drank it. She was always helping herself to something, and yet she never got anything, for the plate and glass disappeared immediately.
Amazing.
Then, dismayed and ashamed, she arose and went into her chamber.
Ashamed.
And wept. But he followed her there. She said, "Has the devil power over me? Or did my deliverer never come?" Then he struck her in the face and said, "Whoa. Did your deliverer never come? It is he who has you in the power, you traitor.
Oh my God.
Have I deserved this from you?"
Yes.
Then he made himself visible, went into the hall, and cried, "The wedding is at an end. The true king has returned." The kings, princes, and counselors who were assembled there ridiculed and mocked him. But he did not trouble to answer them and said, "Will you not go away or not?" At this, they tried to seize him and pressed upon him. And he drew his sword and said, "All heads off but mine." All of their heads were on the ground. He alone was the master and once more the king of Golden Mountain.
No.
The end. Like... One event into the other. No, I mean, I guess it's better than some stories where there is repercussions to some of these actions. But, like, why was she at ruin? Like, what was the thing that happened with the ring? They really should have explained more of what that concept was.
Oh, boy.
Do you have some notes, David?
I have some notes.
David, let's go to lessons.
Lessons.
Okay, I'm just gonna jump in.
David, there's no way to go but up. Just say what's on your mind.
We've already talked a lot about the whole thing about like calling the being so focused on it was a black dwarf and the black.
Sure,
man. I'm not gonna really hit on that.
Okay, okay, we're not gonna bring it up anymore.
All right, don't put all of your stuff on boats.
Yes! Listen, me and you learned that from the trauma of seeing the Titanic in the 90s, but like, yeah, you gotta have it on different boats. Marco Polo had three boats.
Yeah, and then I have a parenthesis there because it's like, well, if you need to ship all of your stuff, then what I will amend it to say is don't put all of your stuff on boats at once.
Yes, yes.
Stagger the shipments. You're going to have part of it and then part of it, you know?
David, totally heard. That's a great lesson.
All right, my next lesson. Beware a vague deal.
Yes, yes.
Know the terms of the contract.
Yeah, whether it's a person who calls you on the telephone trying to sell you police insurance or if it's a man in a field, be wary of these deals.
Beware the vague deal. Okay. So here's something I learned that is true throughout media. We've seen it in many things. I haven't seen the show, but I assume Succession also hits on this theme. Businessman dads will always value money over their sons.
This is a Trump story if I've ever heard it. You know what I mean? Totally forgets about his daughters. Only worried about the one son. And when he fails him, he's on to the next one.
Yeah. Don't enter a bewitched house.
Yes, yes. Especially if you know it to be witched, you should
just. If you're warned ahead of time, don't go looking. That's a don't provoke the weird. If I've ever seen it,
don't provoke the weird.
Don't judge a snake at first glance. It could be a pretty lady.
It could be a sexy lady. Even though you think it might be a dude snake, it might be a lady snake. Might be a
sexy lady.
And they can swallow lots of things, David.
Eggs?
Eggs come to mind.
My next lesson is, a rich lady is obviously worth physical pain.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If I've learned nothing, yeah, that's true.
He went through 3 days of being gang initiated.
Manhandled. Yeah, he was murdered. Yeah, he was jumped in, and if he ever wants to leave this kingdom, he will have to be jumped out.
Birthmarks are like human VIN numbers. You can prove that that's yours.
Yeah, they're like QR codes for your body. You're like, oh, I know what that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can pull up any birthmarks?
You can pull up the Carfax. Not really. I have moles, but that's not quite the same thing.
Well, your moles to me are like the drinking gourd. That's how I know it's you. I connect them and I follow
you.
If I ever
show up and they're not there, you'll know that I'm an imposter or I met with a dermatologist and yes. decided to play it safe. This is in general, but it's don't get tilted or you'll make a mistake. And that was yes. when he got so mad that he wanted to prove he was a king that he wished his wife like to him.
Yeah, I wrote down one lesson from this, and I think it's the actual lesson of the story of don't be mindless. His dad does mindless things. He just does things like, oh, there was no malice. I just didn't think about it. Yeah, yeah, you really should make sure you have a good memory.
Crazy how that's the lesson in a story about, like definitely about a white guy. It's like, hey, be careful about just making decisions willy-nilly, you know? Like
of course, of course.
Don't get involved. This worked out for him, but don't get involved. So I guess actually the lesson is do get involved in another family's inheritance struggle.
Absolutely. If they have money and you want to get some, really got to get your nose in there.
Insert yourself in that decision-making process.
Insert it as deep as like an egg in a snake.
So I wrote this one. This one started as don't stalk your ex, but I actually crossed it out and then put it differently. Don't go to your ex's wedding.
Yes. You're not going to get what you want out of this event. Know,
don't do it. It's fine. You don't have to go.
Yeah, you don't have to go. Yeah.
My final lesson. This is the last one. Mass murder is the solution if you're a white man.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most German thing I've heard in this whole story.
I know, right? Like, that is exactly the point, like, the lesson taught here. And there are people who did take that to heart.
Yeah, now...
throughout history.
Now, I don't know how many people were at that banquet, but as long as it's between 4 and 14, dude, you are correct.
There is at a new queen's wedding banquet, there's absolutely more than 14 people.
And I would say the only lesson or the only prediction you got wrong with that one is that I don't think God was involved.
Were there talking animals?
Yeah, the snake when she was an enchanted snake.
Great. And then yes, God was involved because a priest gave a blessing to the sun.
Oh, that's right, because it protected him from the black man. Yeah. Got
firing,
it. Okay.
Firing on all cylinders. I got him right. I don't like being as right as I was about potentially the most harmful story we've read yet.
Yeah. Yeah. If you,
I don't like how all those answers came so naturally to me.
Yeah. I don't like that there's all these AI transcribing programs that'll take our audio and put it into words because this is a problematic text.
Yeah. Not great.
Well, okay. David, to get to move away from them, I'm moving now to 1859 to page 442 of the Hans Christian Andersen book.
Goddamn.
David, I bring you the tale of the farmyard cock and the weathercock.
Oh, this is not one of the titles that you texted me the other day, so this is a surprise.
This is a surprise. Yeah, the other story is a little too long. It's a good first half story, so I needed a shorter story for this one.
I'm sorry, the farmyard cock.
And the weathercock.
And the weathercock.
It's okay. It's a dual cock story.
Yeah, love those. Okay, the farmyard cock and the weathercock. Well, first, I dropped my pen.
You threw your pen like some sort of Olympic pen thrower.
So first and foremost, poor man or rich man. If there's a human man in this at all, I'm gonna say poor man, like a farmer.
Great, no humans involved. Continue.
See, that was the caveat. That was the thought. Okay, so then next, what is it? Is God involved? No.
I mean, these are... Oh, wait,
Hans Christian Andersen. Yes.
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 In fact, there is a reference to Genesis, which we talked about in our very first episode, which hopefully you'll pick up on.
Okay. Talking animals? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
How many, quote-unquote, people die? How many deaths? I'm going to say 3.
Okay.
And then forced marriage. I don't think... Well, fuck, it's Hans Christian Andersen, though.
I mean, it's called the Animal Husbandry.
I have a prediction in my head for what it's going to like shape up to be, but I'm going to say yes, the marriage happens, and one of the parties will not have had a say in it.
Perfect. I love it. Funny enough, the first line of this story was one of the... names that we almost called this, that we almost named our podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Once there was two cocks, but we decided that was not good. We decided...
We focus tested it, and, you know, it did really well in certain states.
Yeah, funny enough, like one-third of people really liked it, but there was a bunch of people that thought it was problematic. Once there was two cocks, one on a dunghill and one on the roof. Both of them conceded. But which of the two did the most? Tell us what you think. We'll keep your own opinion anyway.
Ooh, is there a fill-in answer sheet at the end of this story?
I mean, all of these Hans Christian Andersens are open-ended questions, so you tell me. The chicken yard was separated by a broad fence from another yard where there lay a manure heap. And on this grew a great cucumber, which is fully aware of being a forcing bed plant. That's a privilege of birth, said the cucumber to herself. Not everyone can be born a cucumber. There must be other living things, too. The fowls and the ducks and the cattle in the next yard are creatures, too, I suppose. I now look up to the farmyard cock on the fence. He certainly is much more important than the weathercock way up there, who can't even creak, much less crow, who has no hens or chickens, who only thinks about himself and perspires rust. No, the farmyard cock, he's a real cock. His walk is like a dance. To hear him crow is like music. And whenever he comes around, people can hear what a trumpeter he is. If he were to come over here, even if he should eat me up, stock and all, it would be a happy death, said the cucumber.
Wow.
Yo, that cucumber wants that cock in her, dude. Like, anyway.
And I know that there are, it feels like there are low-hanging fruit jokes to be made here about how
so many
the word cock so many times.
I'm going to say
one other
more.
Character is a phallically shaped vegetable.
A huge cucumber that is a forcing bed plant, whichever that means. Yeah, there's a lot of terminology here that does not transfer over from 1859.
Hans, baby, what are you hiding from?
I think he's hiding a huge cucumber is what I think. That night, the weather turned very bad. The hens and the chickens and even the cock himself sought shelter. The wind blew down the fence between the two yards with a terrific crash. Tiles fell from the roof, but the weathercock sat firm. He didn't even turn around, because he couldn't. Although he was young, and just because he was very steady and sedate, he had been born old and wasn't a bit like the sparrows and swallows that fly through the vault of heaven. David, the vault of heaven.
Okay.
Remember the air vault and the sea vault?
Yes, yes.
This is an air vault story.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
he despised them. Ordinary pipping birds of no importance, he called them. He admitted that the pigeons were big and glossy and gleamed like a mother of pearl, but almost looked like some kind of weathercock. And when they were fat and stupid, and all they could think of was to stuff themselves with food. Besides, they're such terrible bores to associate with, said the weathercock. The migratory birds also visited the weathercock and told him tales of foreign lands, of caravans in the sky, and fierce robber stories of encounters with birds of prey. And that And that was new and interesting the first time, but the weathercock knew that afterwards they kept repeating themselves and had become monotonous. They're boring and everything is dull. Nobody's fit to associate with. All of them are tiresome and dull. And the world is no good, he said. The whole thing is a bore. The weathercock was what you might call blasé and would certainly have made interesting to the cucumber if she had known about it. But she had eyes on the farmyard cock who had now come into her own yard. The wind had blown down the fence, but the lightning and the thunder were over. How's that for crowing, the farmyard cock said to the hens and chicks. It was a little rough, perhaps, not elegant enough. But the hens and chickens picked at the manure heap, while the cock strutted to and fro like a knight. Garden plant, he said to the cucumber, and with that word she understood her great importance and forgot that he was pecking at her, eating her up. A happy death!
Oh my God.
Then the hens came and the chickens came. From when one of them runs somewhere, the rest run too. They clucked and chirped and gazed and the cock and were proud that he belonged to them. Cock-a-doodle-doo, he crowed.
Okay,
The chickens will immediately grow up to be fine large fowls. If I make a noise like that, the chicken yard of, like the chicken's yard of the world. And then the hens and the chickens answered with their clucking and their chirping. And then the cock told a great piece of news. A cock can lay an egg. Did you know what an egg is inside of it? In the egg, there is a basilisk, and no one can stand the sight of a basilisk. People know that, and know it too. You know what's in me, and what a powerful fellow I am. With the farmyard cock flapping his wings, swelled up his comb, and crowed again. And all the hens shivered, and the little chickens shivered, and they were tremendously proud of one of their kind should be such a cock of the world. They clucked and they chirped until the weathercock could hear it. He heard it, but he never moved.
Because he can't. He doesn't know how to turn around.
It's all stupid nonsense, said the voice within the weathercock. The farmyard cock never lays eggs, and I'm too lazy to do it. If I wanted to, I could lay a wind egg, but the world isn't worth a wind egg. It's all stupid nonsense, and now I don't even want to sit here any longer. With that, the weathercock broke off, but he didn't fall on the farmyard cock and kill it, although he intended to.
Whoa!
Said to the hens. And what's the moral of this? It is better to crow than to be a stuck-up and a break-off. The end.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, I don't know, David. I think they're both full of it. They maybe need a little Jesus in their lives. That this being is... said, let's go to lessons.
Lessons.
Okay. So I'm going to say right off the bat that this story was dumb.
David, the story tells you that it is dumb and all nonsense as well. So you're just hearkening back to the words of Hans Christian Andersen. It's
just not a good story. Now, from that, here's what I gleaned.
It is about...
It was a little hard to follow.
It's a very... Listen, and I apologize to everyone. It is tough to read.
Yeah. My first thought, and I don't know that this is a lesson, the story definitely didn't prove this by the end, I think, but the roof is better than a pile of shit.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, but like the pile of shit was then the growing area for the chickens. It's a difficult one.
Yeah. The second one, I think, this one the cucumber did teach me. Be proud of who you are.
Yes, David, I think so. You are a forcing plant if I've ever seen one. Be proud of who you are.
Cucumbers are gossipy bee words.
Yes, they are. Gossipy little... beaches? What word were you going to say?
The weathercock is the farm's Zoolander.
Yeah.
He can't turn.
He can't turn. He can only go the one way.
If you didn't like that one or you don't know the reference, whatever. Here's a second attempt at the same lesson. The weathercock is the farm's Benjamin Button.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
He was
that's
born old.
Yeah, he was an old soul.
telling the same story over and over is boring. And then I have in parentheses, you're welcome, audience.
Don't put that in there. I mean, I got a bunch of these fucking stories to tell, David. Some of them might be boring.
All I'm saying is, we're like 300 episodes or so deep in different stories. So you're welcome, audience. okay. Don't meet your heroes.
Yeah, for sure.
Idolized the cock and then met the cock and then died. Obviously, the cucumber, that was a happy death, I guess. I don't agree with that. I think that's propaganda.
Okay, I hear you.
My final lesson, and I think this is probably the most important one. A wind egg is a fantastic word for a fart.
Yeah, it is like, because you're like, oh, what's that rotten egg?
It smells like rotten eggs.
It's a wind egg.
It's a wind egg.
I will start referring to my farts as wind eggs because I lay a couple wind eggs every day.
Listen, they happen.
I was told that my wind eggs smell like my body is dying from the inside out. So, yeah. Well, David, those are the fairy tales that I have. I now close them away, give you a kiss, and tuck you into bed.
Mwah.
Curl up with that wet pussy behind you and... that cat's been going hard. So hard. I'm just licking. Going hard on
itself. The cat is laying on the bed behind me, and it is currently looks like bath time for the cat.
This cock talk has done something to this kitty cat. Well, and you know what's funny is these stories have done something to me as well, David. Yep. So it is time to put them to bed.
Wait, what have they done to you? You can't just say that and then...
They've done something to me, David, and I think it's time to put us to bed. David, thank you so much for joining me. And thank all of you out there in Radioland for listening to us. If we're on the radio, please pay us for it. But if it's just normal podcast people, thank you so much. We love hearing all of your correspondence. AI
check
robots.
If you're listening on Spotify, or if you're not, look us up on Spotify and you can participate in the polls and the questions and things. I've been trying to do them for pretty much every episode. Who knows what they'll be in this one? We'll find out. I make that decision at the last moment before I upload them.
Well, I appreciate you being here, David. I appreciate all of your time, and I appreciate all of you. The one that's the cock of the walk, well, that's David Miller.
And the one that's the cream of the crop, well, that's Michael Santel.
Thank you so much for making me something good and not something terrible or one of the other references from our stories today.
You know, I know that I've said the cream of the crop before about you at the end, but this time it actually worked because you set up a nice rhyme and we had a farm story, so.
Yeah, and you're a big wrestling guy, so this also might just be a reference to Macho Man Randy Savage.
Of course.
Oh, you should put that clip for the ending clip. Do his cream of the crop where he keeps pulling out the creamers. It's really good.
Can I tell you a secret that has been true for at least the last 150 episodes of this show?
There's no more ending bits?
No, there is definitely ending bits. I just never do anything you tell me to do.
Yes, I know. I'm aware. I appreciate that. Anytime you
call out a bit, I now go, well, I have to do a different one.
Just going to be Ric Flair yelling, woo, in the background.
See, now I can't use that.
Well, then I won't say any more references to wrestling. That way it gives you some options. And thank you for making us one of your options. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see all you kids and cats next time.
Okay,
bye.
That's our show. Thanks for coming round. Don't be sad. No need to frown. We'll have more stories. Don't throw a fit. Goodbye, one and all, and we'll see you in a bit.
I wonder if it's the same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was.